Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are continuing our series here of backfields. This is backfields that were at the bottom of the league in expected scoring. Go check out yesterday's episode with points, the higher expectations of fantasy scoring backfields here. So these are the bottom, and I think we see some changes here. So this will be interesting. Seattle, the worst, expected 18.9. They actually overperformed that, so at 21.6 points per game, they finished 21st, so that's actually okay. 14.6% over expectation, so really swimming upstream to get to a below average score, right? That's not necessarily putting your guys in the best position to succeed, and frankly, they did. Third best relative to expectation for the backfield there. They add Kenneth Walker because that's always the solution to running back scoring is adding a running back. And interestingly, like if you were to say, all right, well, what's the actual problem? This is why adding running backs for teams is a perfect demonstration of why it's a terrible process to improve your running game. 32nd expectation. Your team outproduces to be 21st. Again, this is a proxy, right? This is a proxy for the actual production. There's other stuff that goes on, but you sort of get the idea. And that's actually third relative to expectation. So you put your guys in a shitty spot. They overperformed and actually pretty close to the median, which ends up being a top three production relative to expectation, and you draft a running back. There's probably other things you could have done with the pick. Kenneth Walker, running back 12. Again, doesn't really offer a ton of the receiving stuff, which is kind of the problem. Maybe we'll see with, they had the worst expected receptions per game at 3.3 last year. So that's real, again, not a lot there to offer. They picked the right guy with questions about his receiving skills. Walker is one for me that I really don't love this situation, and there's not a ton to really see how this changes, honestly, is getting worse at quarterback and the like there. So it's interesting because Walker, we'll go through a few of these. Walker fits in a range of guys that there is some cap ceiling type situations in the receiving game, and Walker's one of them. Penny at 42.5 in terms of his RDP, that's probably interesting from there. Again, he overperformed, was running back one in the playoffs last year, tied with Singletary. Carson at 70.5 might be worth a chip in a chair at that cost. And if he can't play, I know there's some stuff with injuries and the like there. If he can't play, then you could move on. You'll probably get an early reveal on that. All right, Jacksonville here. They're 31st. Again, I don't know how much we count this against them. There's injuries and the like. We're coming back from lost ETN. Robinson's recovering from an injury as well. They were expected 19.1 points per game, scored 17.1. That was the worst, and they were pretty bad relative to expectation as well. But they get back ETN. Hopefully they'll get back Robinson. The whole new coaching staff and the like there. So we'll be on the watch for how that looks going forward. But I wouldn't necessarily hold that situation against a guy like Etienne. And honestly, Etienne, in the range that he's going, again, this will be a familiar refrain. So the patterns reappear. I'm not a huge fan of saying that the history repeats itself, but patterns reappear. And Etienne at running back 14 in a range of guys that we're going to talk about have some capped receiving ceiling situations. Walker running back 12 is his median. J.K. Dobbins at 14, 13 for Chubb, right? And Akers is at 15.5 with his median. All of those guys really have receiving, capped receiving upside based on a lot of the data that we'll talk about in this particular show. Etienne probably doesn't have that. So if you're looking for a guy that could massively outproduce his cost, I think there's a wider range of outcomes on a guy like Etienne. But at that range, probably makes some sense. All right, next one is Baltimore. And this, I think, would probably surprise people. 30th in terms of expectation at 19.8. They ended up performing at 19.7, so basically right on the number. And they were 26th in terms of points per game. Again, 19.8. Expected points per game, that's 30th. 49.2 expected receptions. It's good for 30th. I struggle to see it. I'm really struggling to see the ceiling on the situation. Listen, they drop back to pass a ton. The top three teams in terms of, depending on how you want to measure that, top three teams or so in terms of dropping back to pass. And they just don't run a lot of routes. And they just have a really low expectation. And as a result, like, there's a, it's really tough. And we'll see this with Akers too in a second. It's really tough to put up high end production in this offense with a lack of receiving work, and especially with Lamar being such a threat on the ground. So Dobbins is one that I think there's ways to insulate against. I think there's ways you can go. You can try and pivot down to a Connor, pivot down to a Fournette and hope to grab more upside, or you can use him to pivot up again. I just talked to a subscriber today that did a strategy session, and you know, we talked about potentially a Dobbins to McCaffrey type deal. Get something that changes your range of outcomes. Because I think, frankly, I think Dobbins, there's a lot of ways that you can probably replace Dobbins. So that would sort of be my take there. So, all right, next up is Buffalo. And so I had some interesting stuff on Buffalo. So 29th in terms of expectation, they actually performed slightly better. They performed, so 29th in terms of expectation, they performed 22nd in terms of actual points per game at 20.9, actually slightly below expectation there. I think if there's a fault in the expected scoring, it probably is here. Again, I don't know the algorithm that PFF uses, but I think I've highlighted a way that it's probably warped a little bit, because Devin Singletary on a per route basis is pretty bad in terms of some of his receiving stuff, for example. So he's and this is some reason why I think you might have some optimism on a guy like James Cook, for example, because I think if you were just to start counting targets and stuff, you're going to see it's a little bit buried. But you look, for example, and Devin Singletary grades out as a pretty bad relative to pretty bad in terms of receiving score at PFF. But you look at some of the expectation stats, 42 expected receptions, he produces 40 of them. Again, that's okay. It's basically 200 expectation. 289 is basically his expected receiving yards, and you say 228 as his actual receiving yards. However, right, what that hides is, or what is hidden in that, is he was only targeted on 12.9%, really 13% of his routes. And when you look at that, that's a bottom quarter of the running backs who had more than 200 routes. That's a bottom quarter performance. When you look at his expectation on his yards per route run, for example, that's 25th percentile. All of that is to say that I think a lot of the reasons why he wasn't good at scoring points was actually because he wasn't being targeted. And when you look at some of the other guys in the backfield, right, some of the criticism is Josh Allen doesn't start the running backs. No, he just doesn't throw to Devin Singletary. I think there's a difference there. It shows up, he's sub 15% both years, which is, again, those are bad numbers. 17.5% for Breida, 17.6% for Moss. So when you look at both of those other guys, they're getting open a little bit more, right? And that's a situation where you could say, all right, with a guy like Cook, and I don't think Zach Moss or Breida is anything resembling a world beater in terms of receiving skills, right? I mean, I like Breida, but he has never been a dominant receiver. But you look at those guys relative to Singletary and you realize, gosh, Singletary really was bad. And even if you say this offense isn't super friendly to running backs, I'm going to quibble because I think that the running backs weren't particularly friendly to catching the ball. But even if you want to say it's not that friendly, say something like that 17.6, 17.5 number looks a little bit closer to something normal. That 13% for Singletary, 13% of his routes he's targeted on, that's bad, Right. So I think with a guy like James Cook, there's probably some real growth potential here that's hidden. So that's the thing. I could see a big jump in terms of expected points just because he's going to change the way of which the formula is actually calculated vis-a-vis their guys, just because he's going to get targeted on more routes. So I think Singletary drops down some of their expected points, and they probably perform worse to true expectation than the number would suggest. So I think Cook has some ceiling in this offense in a way that probably isn't captured by this algorithm, would be my hunch. So optimistic about Cook quite a bit here looking at these numbers. Okay, next one is the Giants. And speaking of guys that – so I think you could go a couple ways on this. You could say, all right, like Barkley, again, yeah, 28th. Yeah, he's kind of got screwed via situation. I'm not sure that's true. And when you look at him and you say, all right, well, what's the deal with Barkley and why is he's underperformed? Well, Jason Garrett really put him in a bad situation. Well, that's really not super true. When you look at this, he was expected at 13.8 points per game. Again, he was banged up, missed a little bit of time there, so we don't truly count that against him. But he's expected for 48 receptions. He caught 41 balls. He's expected for 337 receiving yards. He caught 263. He was basically under more than 150 rushing yards as well. But when you look at it, again, you say, all right, well, what did he control? What did he perform? He was targeted on 22.2% of his routes. That's a huge number. That's a top, you know, you're really looking at 72nd percentile in terms of guys, the frequency with which they're targeted. That's a big number. Right, that is a big number, and that's particularly big amongst running backs, right? That's an overall number in terms of that. It's a big number for running backs, and you look his expected yards per route run. He's at 70th percentile. He performed at 50th percentile. Again, that's grading running backs with everybody. You know, or that's just grading the running back position generally for both of those stats. Just underperforming across the board. You know, 68th percentile in terms of expected points per route run. It's PPR points per route run. He performs at 58th percentile. So I don't think the idea that he was put in a super bad situation is all that true, especially from a receiving perspective. Is there more rushing stuff that he could do? Yeah, but that's not really what you're shooting for with him. And again, he did outperform Booker in terms of like some of the targets per route run as well. Like he was targeted much more frequently than Booker was in terms of routes, but Booker outproduced him in yards per route run. You know, so you start looking at some of these stuff and they were throwing him the ball, but Booker was doing more with less essentially, which isn't great. It's not a great sign for Barkley. This isn't he was super efficient, but they didn't know how to use him. It was, hey, he was actually used a bunch and thrown the ball a bunch, but was under efficient. And that gives me a bit of pause with him. And I've talked about this, and I haven't delved super far into it in prior shows when you look at some of these expectation stats. But I think this kind of highlights some of the reasons what my concerns are. So that's really the rub there with him. If he were to put it all together, it could get much better. But he needs to perform better, right? He needs to perform better in the situation is probably one that we are being a little bit too forgiving for, would be sort of my thought. All right, next up, 27th in terms of expected points, 21.8. They actually performed 18.7 points per game, which was 30th, and this is the LA Rams. Listen, the Rams' backfield is like Baltimore with a better haircut. That is, it's Baltimore with better PR. 31st in expected receptions at 3.6 expected receptions per game. Sony Michel underperformed. He was expected for 11.0 points per game. He performed 8.7. Hendo, 14.3 points per game. He performed 13.6. Listen, Akers is at 15.5. Again, I think in this range, you have to figure out how do you make a big splash. And if you are not going to throw the ball to running backs, it's going to be really hard to do that. And we've seen, the guys that succeed from this succeed on just huge rushing production. Guys like Derrick Henry, guys like Nick Chubb. I mean, Nick Chubb just destroyed everything versus expectation, right? Hits him and Jonathan Taylor, and then, just a gulf between those guys and the rest of the position, really, in terms of guys overperforming expectation. This is a classic situation of the situation is perceived to be better because of who the head coach is. But in reality, the offense is good for reasons other than fantasy production for running backs. And that's a little bit of a pause there. Now, could you say, hey, listen, in his best case scenario, it's a much better situation for a guy, for a guy like Akers when he's healthy? Sure, you could sort of make that argument, but this is a kind of a consistent thing with McVay. There's just not a ton of receiving work to really go around. I mean, you go back and there was a total expectation of about 46, 47 receptions for the backfield in 2020 as well. So there's just not a ton there. And that would rank, that ranks near the bottom again as well. So I just, with their situation, I just don't really love where they're at in terms of high end production, and you really need to overperform rushing wise in this offense. It gives me just a bit of pause in terms of Akers. Can Akers be a running back one? Yeah. Can he be like a top five guy? I struggle to see that with this profile. So that gives me some pause there with him. All right. Next up is 26, and you have Chicago. This could be, hey, this is a bit of an indictment on a guy like Montgomery. Yes and no. So 22 points per game expected. That's 26th. They performed at 20 points per game, but so much of it was actually consolidated into Monty that he had 17.1 expected points per game, and that was eighth at the position last year. So really, this position was highly concentrated in David Montgomery. Does that change? I don't see a huge reason to think that it does, to be totally honest. 15.3 points per game. Again, he had eighth in terms of expected points per game last year at the position. And this situation's probably better. I don't know. It's tough to say it's worse than with Matt Nagy last year. So, and I don't think the workload goes away. If anything, I think it probably is more workload for him. Just because there's a lack of overall weaponry, and he would be one of like their top three guys. So that's really my thought there. Like, I'm fine with Montgomery. He projects really in the running back one type of range, and I think that's fine. Does he have overall running back one upside? It's tough to see it. Again, you basically need really, really high production expectation. And to outperform that expectation, it's difficult to do that. And he probably doesn't have that combination. But running back one, perfectly in the range of outcomes. And he has a nice blend in terms of being able to catch as well there. We've seen that in his profile. And he consolidates a lot of that role. So I think Monty's interesting, especially from a discount guy, a discount relative to some of these other guys. He's at running back 21. That's a couple around difference between him and a guy like Dobbins. And Dobbins is probably doesn't have the same ceiling that Monty does. So that's would be a pivot thought there for you as well. And last but not least in this bottom eight category is the San Francisco 49ers. I think if you were to go back and say, what was my failing on Sermon? It was like, I didn't expect the later drafted guy to outsmash him, but I think you could go back and say, hey, the situation isn't as good as you think it was. So 4.5 expected receptions per game. That's way down at the position. That's not that high. And so you say, all right, like that's, again, that is, he is total at the position. That is actually, that's 20, that's 25th. So not great there. And you just, Yeah, I think Shanahan gets a lot of credit for this offense being good. And I actually tweeted about this earlier. I just said, you know, and I'm recording this on Thursday night. And the reaction is kind of awesome. It's is San Francisco a good situation for running back fantasy scoring? 64% of people said yes. 36% of people said no. And this is kind of what – it's kind of the opposite of that. And so – yeah, I mean this was one of those ones that's a bit surprising, and we'll see, you know, with a guy like TDP, is I think he may be one of those situations where you see, and Elijah Mitchell's probably a good example of this. You get a guy in a situation that's perceived good, flip it, right? I think that's probably the lesson from here. So, and we have a good enough track record on Shanahan to kind of know what his offense is, and it's not really receiving centric in the running in the for the backfield. So that would be my pause there. Again, I'm not backing off TDP at price, but it's interesting, relatively, you're getting day two profile in TDP two rounds later than Kenneth Walker. And they have a lot of the same concerns. Again, Walker, I think, has a better shot at being the starter, obviously, in week one. So that's probably the difference there. But from a ceiling perspective, they both have similar questions. It's interesting. You kind of take the discount on TDP by a couple of rounds and hope the situation sort of sorts out. But there's nothing to say that Walker's going to be the week one starter anyways, right? You have a little bit of a crowded depth chart. Again, it could clear and, you know, Penny's brittle, but I think when you compare some of these things, it's interesting, and you're looking at the profile you're investing in, you have to have some pause and a critical eye. So that's really, I think this situation is helpful for all that. So, well, that'll do it for this episode of running back backfields that are on the lower side of expectation last year. And I'm sure there will be change, but again, when you look at these, Chicago with a new coaching staff, the Giants with a new coaching staff, Buffalo with a new offensive coordinator, Jacksonville with a new coaching staff. So a lot of turnover here, and that's kind of what we see. Teams that struggle offensively go with new coaches. That obviously wasn't entirely true, because Buffalo, as they were very good, but they did make changes, right? And teams don't tend to settle on what they did. One of the changes they made was spend a day two pick on a running back, right? So, so we'll see how that works out for them. But yeah, there is changing here, and you would expect it to change and these offenses to move around quite a bit. So that'll do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.